Picture this. It's a Saturday morning, mid-October, maybe 40 years ago.
Yeah.
You're in the passenger seat of some beat-up Ford pickup. The heater's rattling, you know, blasting that specific smell of dust and old coffee that only exists in farm trucks.
Oh, I know that smell.
And you're watching your dad drive up this long gravel driveway toward a farmhouse you've passed 1,000 times, but, well, never actually stopped at.
It's such an iconic scene. I mean, it's practically etched into the DNA of rural America.
It really is. So you pull up, the farmer steps out onto the porch, wiping his hands on a rag. Your dad gets out, walks over, shakes his hand. They chat about the corn harvest or the local football team for, what, 5 minutes?
Right, the usual pleasantries.
And then he asks the question, mind if we hunt the back 40 for whitetail this season?
And back then, the answer was almost, I mean, it was statistically guaranteed to be yes.
Yeah, a handshake. Maybe you promise to fix a fence rail if you see one down. Or you guarantee you'd drop off some venison sausages if you got lucky. Mm. It was just simple. It was neighborly.
It was simple. But let's be real. If you try that exact same thing today, same truck, same driveway, same question, you are going to get a very different answer.
Oh, absolutely.
You're likely staring at a locked gate, maybe some orange paint on the trees, and a no trespassing sign that looks brand new. Or if you do get to that porch, it's a polite but very, very firm refusal.
And that shift from the open gate to the locked one, that is exactly what we are digging into today. Yeah. We are exploring the whole evolution of land access for hunters.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to unpack why we went from those friendly handshakes to a culture of, well, liability fear. Specifically, we're looking at how the threat of lawsuits just fundamentally changed the American landscape for hunting.
But we aren't just dwelling on the bad news. We've pulled our sources from the American Hunting Lease Association, specifically a really insightful piece called Don't Stop Knocking on Doors.
Right.
Because the data shows that while the old method might be dead, access isn't. It requires a completely different strategy now.
It's way less about charm and a lot more about business.
Exactly. We're going to show you how to professionalize the ask.
Before we get to the solution, though, we have to diagnose the illness. Because I think a lot of hunters, especially, you know, the younger generation or maybe folks coming back to the sport, they just assume farmers got meaner.
Or that they hate hunters now.
Yeah.
And that is the biggest misconception we need to clear up right away. It's just not fair to the landowners. The golden age of access wasn't just about people being nicer. It was about a completely different legal environment.
Okay.
Back then, sweetening the pot, like offering to help with chores or sharing the harvest, that was just being a good neighbor. It was a social transaction.
It was a community building. It wasn't a contract.
But then, as the source material highlights, America became insanely litigious. The legal framework shifted right under everyone's feet. And this is where we have to get a little technical to really understand the fear.
Yeah.
We need to talk about something called recreational use statutes.
Okay, let's unpack that. Because recreational use statute sounds like something that should help hunters, not hurt them. If I hear that term, I assume it keeps land open.
In theory, yes. And most states have these laws. Basically, they say if a landowner allows the public to use their land for recreation without a fee, the landowner is immune from most liability.
So if you let a guy walk into birdwatch or hunt for free and he, I don't know, trips in a gopher hole, he can't sue you.
Essentially, yes. You're protected because you are being benevolent.
Okay, that sounds good. The law protects the generous farmer. So why did the gates all lock?
Because of how the courts started to define a fee. This is what we might call the summer sausage paradox.
Right. The article mentioned this, and honestly, I had to read it twice because it sounded so ridiculous. The idea that a stick of summer sausage could ruin a farm, that feels like a massive exaggeration.
It sounds like hyperbole, I know, but legally, it's a critical distinction. Courts in different states started interpreting those neighborly gestures, a day's labor fixing a barn, a cooler full of meat, $50 for gas, as consideration.
Consideration meaning payment, like a formal transaction.
Exactly, a formal exchange of value. And the moment any value changes hands, even a sausage, the hunter is no longer a recreational user. In the eyes of the law, he transforms into an invitee.
Okay, so play devil's advocate here.
Yeah.
Why does that label even matter? Is there really that much difference between a user and an invitee?
Oh, it's a massive difference. If an invitee, the guy who paid with a summer sausage trips in that exact same gopher hole, he can sue.
Wow.
The law says that because there was a transaction, the landowner now has a higher duty of care. They have to ensure the premises are safe. They have to warn you of hidden dangers. They basically have to inspect the property.
But that's impossible for a farmer with 500 acres of woods. I mean, you can't inspect every badger hole or loose branch after a storm.
Precisely. It sets a standard of safety that is completely impossible to meet in a wild environment. So by trying to be a good guy and offer the farmer some venison, the hunter was inadvertently stripping the farmer of his legal protection.
And exposing him to a huge lawsuit.
A massive one.
That is just perverse. You try to be polite and you end up creating a liability trap.
And we aren't talking about a slap on the wrist. We are talking about judgments that could cost a family their farm. You have to remember, for a lot of these landowners, the land isn't just an asset. It's their heritage.
They're land rich, cash poor.
Very often. So if they get hit with a $500,000 injury settlement, they don't just write a check. They have to sell the back 40.
So when the farmer says no, he's not saying, I don't like you. He's saying, I can't risk my family's legacy on your hobby.
That's it. The path of least resistance. The only way to be 100% safe was to just say, no hunting. Lock the gate. Don't take the sausage. Don't take the handshake. Just keep everyone out.
And the impact on the hunting community from that. I mean, it's been brutal. If you don't own land and you can't get permission, the sport effectively dies for you.
That's the tragedy of it. Source mentions that access to quality habitat became the single most important issue in the whole sport. Frustration just mounted. You had dedicated hunters who just, they hung up their waders.
Put the rifles away for good.
Yeah. Because the hassle factor of just finding a place to go outweighed the joy of the hunt.
It's a sad image, just giving up because all the doors are closed. But, you know, looking at the AHLA material, the market usually finds a way to correct itself.
It does. And in this case, the correction came in the form of the hunting lease.
Right.
Now, if you're listening to this and you're from, say, Texas or Georgia, you're probably rolling your eyes right now.
Right. You're thinking, we've been leasing land since the 70s.
Totally. Paying to play is standard operating procedure in the South. But the source notes that this concept started migrating north and east, and pretty aggressively, as this whole liability crisis got worse.
But it wasn't just about liability, was it? We have to look at the economics of the farm itself.
Oh, absolutely.
The why for the farmer. Because even if they are worried about lawsuits, why invite strangers on the land at all? Why not just keep it empty and safe?
Money. Simple as that. I mean, think about the life of a modern farmer. Operational costs, diesel, fertilizer, seed, they've skyrocketed.
And grain prices are all over the place.
Unstable. They fluctuate with global markets. Your margins are razor thin. And suddenly, you have this asset, your land, that isn't generating any income during the winter months or in the wooded areas where you can't plant crops.
It's dead capital.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A hunting lease monetizes that dead space. It might pay the property taxes for the year. It could cover the insurance premium on a new tractor. It creates a revenue stream that isn't dependent on the weather or the price of soybeans.
So the economic incentive is definitely there. But wait, we just spent 5 minutes explaining that taking money creates a liability issue. If I pay the farmer $2,000 for a lease, I'm definitely a paying customer.
You are definitely an invitee.
You spot the contradiction.
Yeah. The risk is even higher now. If I'm paying thousands, surely the expectation of safety is higher than if I just gave him a sausage.
Correct. So if you just hand the farmer $2,000 cash and shake on it, you have actually maximized his danger. You've created a commercial relationship with absolutely zero protection.
It's a ticking time bomb.
The handshake lease.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you square that circle? How do you pay the farmer, which he wants, without exposing him to a lawsuit, which he fears?
This is where the whole professionalization of the hobby comes in. This is where the American Hunting Lease Association, the AHLA, steps in as the bridge. They realized you can't just have a loose agreement anymore.
You need something more formal.
You need what they call a risk management package.
That sounds very corporate for a deer hunt. Risk management package. Sounds like I need an HR department to go sit in a tree stand.
It does, doesn't it? But we have to get comfortable with that language because that is the world we live in now. And the source breaks down what this actually looks like. It involves three key components. First, a custom lease agreement.
So a real contract, not just a verbal, hey, stay away from the cows.
A formal document. And this isn't just red tape. A good lease agreement defines the scope of permission. It says where you can park, where you can shoot, what you can harvest. It removes all that ambiguity.
So if you trip in a hole in an area you weren't supposed to be in, that contract matters.
Big time. Okay, so that's step one. Step two is organization using a platform to manage the lease. But step three is the golden ticket. It's the insurance.
I assumed insurance was part of this. But hold on. Doesn't a farmer already have insurance? Doesn't his standard farm policy cover accidents on his land?
That is probably the most dangerous assumption in all of this. And generally, no. Most farm and ranch policies cover, well, farming and ranching.
Not a side hustle.
They do not cover commercial recreational enterprises. The moment the farmer takes that $2,000, he has started a separate business. His standard policy might just deny the claim because he is operating an undisclosed business on the property.
Wow. So he thinks he's covered, but he's actually flying naked.
Exactly. So the AHLA program includes a specific dedicated policy, a $2 million hunting lease liability policy.
$2 million. That is a serious safety net.
It is. But here is the crucial detail, the thing that makes the whole system work. This policy protects both the hunter and the landowner. The landowner is named as an additional insured.
That's the key unlock.
It changes the entire conversation. If you walk up to a farmer and say, I'll give you $500 to hunt, all he hears is risk. But if you walk up and say, I will give you $500, plus here is a certificate of insurance that names you specifically and covers us both for $2 million in liability, he hears security.
You're removing the fear. You are neutralizing the very reason he started saying no in the first place.
You're essentially acting as your own risk manager. You are bringing the solution to his problem.
Which leads us to the actionable part of this whole deep dive. The source article is titled, Don't Stop Knocking on Doors. And I love this advice because it's a mix of old school and new school.
It's not saying do everything online.
No, it's saying get in the truck, but change the script.
It's a new twist on an old technique, as they put it.
So let's role play this a bit. I want you, the listener, to really visualize how this conversation goes down. The source paints this picture of driving to work and seeing turkeys strutting in a field.
Oh man, every hunter knows that feeling. You drive past, you see the game, and you just think, man, I wish.
Right. And the old impulse, the one that always fails now, is to just drive up, knock, and ask, can I hunt those birds?
And the farmer says, get lost, I don't want to get sued. End of conversation.
Correct. The AHLA is saying, stop the car, go knock. But don't go empty-handed. You don't bring a pie. You bring a policy.
You go armed to make a deal.
So imagine the difference in that conversation. You knock on the door. You introduce yourself. You shake his hand. But instead of asking for a favor, you start with empathy. You acknowledge the elephant in the room.
Yeah, you lead with their problem, not your want.
Okay, so I'm the farmer. I open the door. What do you say to me?
Well, I look you in the eye and say something like, sir, I see you have turkeys in the field. I'd love to hunt them. But I also know that in this day and age, letting strangers on your land is a massive liability risk for you. I know one lawsuit could hurt this farm.
Okay, pausing there. As the farmer, that is incredibly disarming. Finally, someone who isn't just asking for something, but someone who gets it.
It validates their fear. And then you pivot. You say, because I understand that risk, I treat my hunting like a business arrangement. I use a professional leasing association. If we were to work something out, I would provide a written contract that follows your rules. And more importantly, I would provide a $2 million liability insurance policy that names you on the certificate. If anything happens to me, you are covered.
You're basically acting like a professional land manager. Not just a guy looking to shoot something.
You're turning a hobbyist interaction into a B2B transaction. You're saying, I understand your business assets, and I have a proposal that protects them.
And the result?
Well, the source puts it beautifully. You might just be the one setting your decoys out in that field during turkey season.
I love that. It empowers the hunter. Instead of feeling like a beggar asking for scraps, you're a partner offering a deal.
And let's be honest, it solves a problem for the landowner, too. Mm. We forget that deer and turkeys are often pests to farmers. Deer eat crops. Turkeys scratch up seedlings. They want the population managed. They want the revenue.
They just don't want to lose the farm.
And if you can solve the losing the farm part, the gate swings open.
It's really just about professionalizing the hobby. And I guess for some people listening, that might feel a little cold. We all want that nostalgic handshake and a smile world, but that world is gone.
It is the natural evolution of things. As society becomes more complex and litigious, our informal interactions have to adapt. We can mourn the loss of the handshake deal, and there is something sad about that loss of innocence. But we can't ignore reality.
If you ignore reality, you sit on the couch during hunting season.
That's it. And honestly, for you, the listener who is sitting there thinking, I miss the old days, that's fair. But if you want to hunt today, this is the roadmap.
It is. And it's not just about getting what you want. It's about preserving the tradition. If hunters don't adapt to this model, we lose access. If we lose access, we lose hunters.
And if we lose hunters, we lose the primary funding for conservation in this country. It's a huge domino effect.
That's a great point that often gets overlooked. We forget that hunting licenses and excise taxes on gear, the Pittman-Robertson Act funds, that pays for the conservation of the animals. No access means no licenses sold.
Exactly. So this risk management stuff isn't just boring paperwork. It's literally the infrastructure that keeps the North American model of wildlife conservation alive on private land. Without private land access, the whole system collapses.
So what does this all mean for you? It means the next time you see that field or that patch of woods, don't assume the no hunting sign is permanent. It might just be a no uninsured hunting sign in disguise.
That's a fantastic way to frame it. The lock is on the gate. But you might be holding the key in the form of a liability policy.
Before we wrap up, I want to leave everyone with a thought that popped into my head while we were discussing the summer sausage legal trap.
Let's hear it.
It's kind of a provocative idea. We spent this whole time talking about how giving a neighbor a stick of sausage transformed a friendly visit into a commercial transaction with heady legal weight.
Right.
It makes you wonder, as our world gets more litigious and more transactional, what other casual parts of our lives are secretly business deals just waiting to be formalized?
That is a deep question.
I mean, think about it. If summer sausage counts as a legal fee, are we going to need liability waivers for potluck dinners? You know, if I hit my buddy move a couch and I drop it on his foot, is that negligence in a workplace environment because he bought me pizza?
It sounds absurd, but 40 years ago, the idea of needing a $2 million insurance policy to sit in a tree stand sounded absurd, too. The line between friend and business partner is getting blurrier every single day.
Exactly. We're moving toward a world where intent matters less than contract. But hey, at least for hunting, we know how to navigate it now.
We do. Don't stop knocking. Just change the pitch.
Thanks for diving in with us today. Stay safe, stay insured, and stay curious. We'll catch you on the next one.